Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats, health and wellness advice for women over 40 and beyond with Amanda Thebe. This is a show full of hot topics specifically for hot women. Amanda Thebe is a force of nature for women who are experiencing menopause hell and want to start feeling healthy and fit in their 40s and beyond. Through her very frank articles, podcasts, and hilarious social media presence, she's here to help you with informative advice while making you laugh like a 20-year-old throughout. Her raging fans have called her an unstoppable inspiration, resilient bitch. Please visit us at fitandchips.com. And now, here's your host, Amanda Thebe.
Welcome back to this week's Fit and Chips Chats. I'm your host, Amanda Thebe, and I'm delighted to have Lee Peel on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very glad to be here today.
Lee Peel is a nationally published author who's been featured in publications such as Men's Health, The Guardian, and The Washington Post. You may remember her from being a co-host on the Fitcast, and she also has her own podcast called Ask Lee, which was originally started in 2012, and she's bringing that back in January 2019 by much popular demand, I believe. So that's exciting.
There's three people messaging me.
And those three people count. Everybody can. And as a personal trainer, Lee has a certification through the National Academy of Sports Medicine and has worked with actors, models, fighters, and athletes from all over the world. But what I really love about the whole introduction to Lee is that she describes herself as a layman's researcher, which is what I feel like I am too. I don't come from a science background, but I just love getting knee deep into the stats and into the studies, and then seeing how that translates over to the population that we're working with. So welcome to the show again, Lee. And so let's talk about fat loss, because this is one of those subjects that, especially the women who listen to this podcast, and you said, and also everybody else in the world, like fat loss is always the subject we want to talk about.
This is the holy grail.
So if you're over 40, over 35, start. Because actually for me as well, menopause started at 35, perimenopause, and a lot of women it does without even them realizing, as well as like physiological changes that happen. So you're 35 and you're starting to get fat. What's happening, Lee? Tell me.
Well, you know, there's a combination of factors. And it's of a great debate. And funny enough, from what I've come across in research, there's not a grand consensus in the sense of what our leaders and teachers are talking to us about it. Because there's still kind of that old adage that goes around that says, you know, your metabolism slows dramatically. And it's an emphasis on these kind of words that are used to dramatic or statistical significance and these kinds of phrases that are used. And it's about getting kind of caught up in that jargon, I think, that's gotten a lot of people in trouble, to make them feel as if that the changes that do happen to our bodies, and there are changes that happen to our bodies, there's a constant achievement towards homeostasis that is trying to occur in new beginnings and platforms of errors that we reach. But basically it's about how much control we have over it. And if we can control those changes, or if we can affect those changes. And what I like to break it down into is the physiological changes that happen from like a biological standpoint, alterations in metabolism, things that we really cannot alter or change unless we wanted to go perhaps into pills or medications, things of that nature. And then things that are more lifestyle or environmental changes. And what I like to focus on the most are discussing those kind of lifestyle and environmental changes. But you know, the first question, or the biggest question that people ask me, is there an actual alteration that happens? Are there changes in metabolic rate? And there are little tiny decreases that can happen and that commonly happen, but they don't necessarily have to happen. And as we age, and I'll try to keep it short because there's a lot of caveats and variables.
That's fine. But let's just talk about that whole you know, the reports out there that, you know, every decade we lose a certain percentage. Yeah.
Yeah. Technically, to the variables of like the average population, there's a degree of that that is true. And the degrees of that that are most true are actually activity based. As we go through our lifestyle habits from being in youth and then moving into college or new jobs sectors or things of that nature, sociability, we form marital statuses or relationship patterns. We settle down physically. We settle. We usually are not as active and we're not as physically engaged in those kind of activities as much as possible, which is why people have to actively make an effort to exercise. They're like, oh, you know, in my 20s, I could do whatever I want. But in my 30s or my 40s, I finally had to start exercising. Those things take place due to a lot of environmental, lifestyle, and kind of sociological changes that come into play. The bigger question is how much of that is actually into play in a metabolic rate? Well, with muscle, for example, over the years, we usually or generally keep still building muscle. And we have what they kind of casually call your kind of average building of muscle rate for throughout your life. Like, for example, just basic activities from carrying your children around or carrying groceries or participating in household activities or things of that nature. If you're kind of an active and more participant person in your lifestyle, you actually will carry a little bit more muscle on average than, say, someone who is a less active participant of life who goes into a more sedentary lifestyle or sedentary job workforce or things of that nature. There's usually a chance of atrophying that can like take place or more so a not building. And muscle adds a little bit to the metabolism, right? Not a glowingly, shockingly amount, but just a little bit. There's that. There's ebb and flows in progesterone and estrogen and testosterone. They kind of go up and they go down and they ebb and they flow, but somewhere around the perimenopause or the menopausal state, they switch gears. And the biggest question has kind of been, you know, does that slow metabolic rate? There does seem to be a little bit of a stagnant point in which that we hit in our basal metabolic rate, in which that body temperature lowers a little bit. Heart rates have a tendency to kind of settle in. Activity rates and muscle rates combined with that means that statistically overall, perhaps you could have a 50 to 100 calorie less base of basal metabolic rate than perhaps you had in your early 20s or 30s.
So let's I know you've got so much to say and it's so exciting. I'm like revved up here. People can't see, but I'm revved up. So okay. Your basal metabolic rate, can you just explain that just in case somebody doesn't know what that
sure.
is? And then really sure. how insignificant 50 to 100 calories a day.
It is. It is. Our metabolic rates are made up of a few factors. I'm actually working on a research study, a report to kind of help us rename them casually. But our basal metabolic rate is kind of your at rest or your resting metabolic rate. They're a little different. Resting metabolic rate is chiefly known as what would happen if we were, say, in a coma situation. You were in a bed rest hospital. You're being tube-fed intravenously or you're really not moving in any shape or form. That's kind of your resting metabolic rate. And basal is more of a assumed calculation based upon your average kind of daily bodily functions in a daily life. And this is important, and it's what a lot of people don't discuss or kind of find into that tooth detail, but they take into account in these calculations, the calculations have taken into account a certain level of digestion, a certain level of activity, a certain level of movement already, a certain level of heart rate. There's already some stuff already into our basal, which is commonly confused because people talk a lot about the other factors of our activity rate, which is TEF, thermic effect of food from eating or from tea or NEAT, and NEPA, which are these kind of additives of exercise or low-grade activity or these kinds of things that add on into addition. So our basal is kind of our base rate. So, you know, if you how much your body temperature is, how functional your thyroid is, how everything from the kind of amount of energy you give into hair growth to immune system repair, Anything that in which the system is not functioning flawlessly might rev it up a little bit because it's having to work harder. So in some senses, for example, if you have a really great, perfectly operating system and not a lot's really going on and you have a low heart rate and you're generally overall very healthy, it may be a little bit aggravating, but you actually will have a lower metabolic rate. It's not because you're sick or it's not because there's something wrong with you, but in fact, it can be because you're quite efficient and that your rate of metabolic activity is very efficient and good. So there's a lot that goes into it. If you will, it's one of those kind of big circles with a bunch of tiny bubbles inside of it that spans out. Yes. and has so many different little variables and processes into it. So how much does that rate decrease? Some suggest, but it's not overwhelmingly perfect, that it does decrease little bits here and there as we kind of age and go on. How much of that is actually affected by our activity and our lifestyle habits and can be completely reversed or non-statistically significant in any sort of way?
Yeah, that was a tongue twister for anyone. Never mind.
A little bit. How much can we avoid that, or is it even something that we need to take into account? I suggest very little. I suggest that we actually are in a lot more control of it than we're kind of led to believe, or that it's not statistically that significant.
Right. So how does that look then for this 35-year-old woman moving into her 40s that feels as though she hasn't changed anything in her life? Like nothing's changed. You know, she's eating the same, her activity level's the same, and she started to gain weight and it doesn't make sense to her. You said that there are some switches of gears that happen during perimenopause. We do know that the distribution of fat changes.
Yes.
And so that might be one of the reasons why she feels different.
Yes.
Rather than like the clothes might fit differently. And I know that's really important, I think, to sort of acknowledge. But is there anything else that could be going on that could be causing this?
Sure. Overall, general water retention increases as we age. And that's one of the ones that is not discussed as much. And water and fat, to the average person, and some days myself as well, looked exactly the same. Basically, the distribution of the type of hormones you have in any woman, and the easiest way to explain this is just simply to go around your period time or when you used to have your cycle as it ebb and flowed, you knew that you had periods of times in which that you were going to be higher in water weight and lower in water weight, that your neck might puff up or around your hip areas would increase or your breasts would become larger or more tender. All of these kind of factors are based upon the ebb and flow of your hormones. And there's a bunch of them, and I won't get too technical on that, but suffice to say that when you move in from peri into menopause and when those kinds of things shift, and through the time period as well, I mean, just even in your 30s, you will note, and a lot of women will note, all of a sudden they have boobs where they did not have boobs. All of a sudden they'll be carrying weight kind of lower in their hips and bottom than they used to. Maybe perhaps they never had any sort of weight or fat in their face or in their cheeks or in their neck, and all of a sudden they do. These distributions are going to be variable based upon the type of high and low levels of these hormones that you have. Some of that is genetics, some of it is lifestyle. So the most important kind of thing for you to note is not necessarily to go, okay, when you hit 40, you're going to grow boobs. Or when you hit 40, you're going to all of a sudden gain 5 pounds for no reason out of nowhere in one specific area. That's not usually how it works, and it's different for different people. But it is kind of a general statement to say that water will shift, and even fat allocation and where it's located will shift, which... sometimes that can really give women a different perspective of where their weight is, because we have constant normals or homeostasis that we look at. We look in the mirror every day. We look at the same places. Our eyes will follow into the same kind of directions. And you may not notice that there was some of that fat that was in the lower bit of your calves or the side of your thighs that moved upwards or downwards or around in those allocations. But that sometimes can have a lot to do with it, even in slight scale changes between 2 to 5 pounds can be explained by everything that has absolutely nothing to do with technical fat storage. And then there's the aspects in which that we can't ignore that Everything is a variable of the numbers. And sometimes with those metabolic shifts or those decrease, and sometimes even an increase in efficiency or increase in stress, which therefore sometimes metabolic rates can alter and change of what we need. Food intake can stay the same. Activity can stay the same, but need and desire of that can go down, and it can be small amounts. And it doesn't necessarily mean that your metabolic state is depressed. It can mean when it's more efficient. And in all that, unless you're monitoring everything absolutely perfect, which is not possible in a free living society, you can have slight increases. And we're talking slight increases of a pound or 2 pounds of fat from those slight deviations over the course of a year to 2 years that snuck up on you. So, you know, in those kind of an areas, you can see how a little bit can be fat, a little bit can be water, slight alterations can do that. And if someone was even beautifully habitual, there can be minor changes. But to me, you know, I just always like to restate that there are changes that I think that can be altered with fairly minimal strain to changing habits.
So, leads perfectly into my next question then. So there's a lot of information you give us there, like a lot for people to digest as they're listening to. And digest being a funny word to pick, but yeah. So we have an idea that you know, our fat distribution can change as our lives change and as they progress. And I think it's really important to acknowledge we're not the 20-year-old person we are when we're in our 30s. We're not the 30-year-old person we are when we're in our 40s. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that one of the things I really want to push to women is that just because you're in your 40s or your 50s or your 60s and you look different, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think we need to change the perception of what we should look like and what our bodies can and can't do as we age, and be just realistic about everything. And then that's by education. For me, that's by education. That's by just informing women and giving them as much information as possible and then telling them what they can control. And so I'd love to go into that area now and sort of talk about, you know, as we do move through life and things start to change and we feel like we're out of control, which is a very frustrating and sometimes depressing place to be for women. What can they do? What can they tangibly do to see like a change, a positive change for them?
Oh, great question. I do think there are physical or habit activities that can take place, and I will address that. But I do think that first and foremost, mindset is the most important thing, because our society is built upon comparison, and we do live in a time, especially now, in which that more than ever, youth, especially with social media and things of that nature, are somewhat glorified. And oftentimes when I work with people, a lot of the things that they do, it's kind of, I always say that personal trainers are kind of like the body makers or sculptors in versus of hairdressers, in which that someone will come in with a picture and they'll say, you know, this is what I'd like to look like. And it's like, that's not even you. That's not who you are. You know, that's not, you know, you need to look like the best version of yourself that may not be possible. And don't get me wrong, there's actually a lot that's possible, and there's a lot that we can do. I don't mean to say that we can't, but
let's be realistic.
Yes, a lot of people try to get back to something that they had in their youth. And a lot of times, what they don't even realize is what they're really trying to get back to is a hopefulness. And it's nothing to do with their physicality. It has to do with you know, the horizon on the other side, and perhaps confidence and self-trust, or perhaps even a little bit of rebelliousness and danger, all of it mixed in there, really has very little to do with waist size. And one of the things that I talk to with, you know, older clients, myself, by the way, is included. It's not coming from a pedestal of glorious youthness. Is I try to discuss with them. I say, you know, I will be honest with you. I do deal with a lot of people that do kind of tend to want to get back to glory days. And I say to them, do you know? I say, was everything together and perfect during that time? And sometimes some of them will say, yeah, it was. You know, it was great. I really really loved it. And I say, okay. If that's an answer that they get, I say, do you happen to know anyone during that period of time that you perhaps were not them? But you saw them walk around through life and you saw them walk around with things not being entirely perfect. And how many people can you remember or do you remember experiencing did not have everything they exactly wanted and their body shape or size or whatnot had absolutely nothing to do with it? And like, yeah. I mean, I know people like that because we all do. And I say, okay, well, you know, ultimately, you need to look at the inside of things and realize that the body that you have is not exactly going to relay everything that you want. And don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean that we can't try to do it and it doesn't mean that we can't try to live for something, but trying to get back to some sort of glory days of youth or trying to have the smallest figure we can have or trying to get the lowest level of body fat is not necessarily the goal. And I also remind them that when it comes to youthful appearance and when it comes to those who kind of want to hold on as much as they can to an elasticity or to kind of have any sort of youthful veil or appearance, that body fat is really great for that. And it's also great for protection and as well as muscle mass and all these kinds of things. And that perhaps the smallest person in the room or the tiniest version of themselves is not necessarily the angle that they want to go, both for vanity and for mental state of mind. So I just want to throw that out.
That's true with me. And somebody gave me an analogy that I can't remember now, but it was something similar to like babies are either born as aliens or Winston Churchill. And yes. as we age, we sort of, there's two characters that we end up looking like, and one of them is Skeletor. Do you remember Skeletor?
Yes.
Of He-Man?
Yes.
And I've got that type of face. I'm never going to get the jowls.
Yes.
But I'm always going to have that gaunt face, and it's not pretty. And it always looks better to me when I've got loads of fat on me.
There you go. And I look better in my face when I have less. I do. You know, I have a tendency towards my genetics in my family. We all have we have no cheekbones genetically. There's nothing there. We have no chins. Yeah, we don't have anything like that. So I look a little bit better at a lower body fat, but not a freakishly low body fat. And there's a balance. And but at the end of the day, too, we're gonna age, and these things are. It really is true that as you get older, I think you do have to kind of embrace that moment where, and it's that classic line that they say, you know, in my 20s, I cared what everybody thought. And then in my 30s, I learned to care only what I think. And in my 40s and my 50s, I didn't care what anybody thought, even myself. You know, it's that thing in which I think it is a rite of passage. I think we kind of learn that. But with all that said, I think there is, and it's a bit of a controversial thing that I say this, but I think it's important. I think there is a tendency to turn aging into victimization. And that's not to attack. We've all done it. I do it. We all do it. And is that something's happening to us? And we tend to feel as if like there's this loss of control or spinning out of control. And what I like to remind people, even if they get mad at me for it, is that you have so much control over what it is you need to do. It's usually the strategy that's the problem. It's usually the plan. The, you know, if you will, you know, you can go into a war with thousands and millions on your side, but if you don't have the right plan, if you're all running in at one point and everybody's flanking from the sides, it doesn't matter how many people you have. It doesn't matter at the fact that you're trying and working really hard and putting in an effort. It's a bad plan. And so this is where it comes into play in which that where I wish to try to help people is I help them understand the variables of their lifestyle, of their habits, and where they can make changes and help them get to where they need to get by the right plan. Because there's no one in my entire professional career, and it's been almost 15 years now, but there's no one in which that I haven't been able to help lose fat if they wanted to. If they don't want to and they're not ready to, then that's an emotional and psychological problem or a societal problem or, you know, whatever. But if it really is their point shoot things. However, with that being said, it's not simple. It's not easy. And it's not for everyone and for everyone at the right time. And it may not even be for anyone ever if that's not their agenda. That it's really about the plan. It's about understanding the plan of attack of things. And it is absolutely possible for anyone to kind of go up and down and lose weight or body fat or technical weight or gain muscle or lose muscle. It is a system. It's just a matter of stepping back and not allowing it to feel as if that it's doing something to you. Because more than not often, and this is also true, and I'll end on this, more than not often, your body's actually working very well and it's trying to take care of you. It does not care for your vanity. It cares for taking care of you. It cares for fighting infections. It cares for protecting you from evolutionary changes and processes. It cares not for the vanity of things that you desire sometimes. And sometimes you have to realize that and work with it a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting because I remember speaking to Krista Scott Dixon and she went, you know, your body is so much smarter than you. You know, let it do its thing. And it's true. Like let it do its thing. And also there's nothing intrinsically wrong with being vain. It's okay to have that. Yeah. And I think that, you know, society does put incredible pressures on women to stay youthful and stuff. But we're not saying, hey, let that shit go and don't look after yourself, because there's obviously a fine balance that makes you feel the best you can be and have realistic expectations about what you think you want to be and then why. And my question always comes back to the person is like, and why do you want that? Like, what's the end goal? And often on a fat loss journey, it tends to be that the fat loss goal ends up melting away slightly and other goals become a little bit more prominent. And I liked your line when you spoke about the working with mindset, and you know, often it's like looking on what's on the horizon. And women do lose the sense of adventure. It happens. We see it sort of like they have a bit of self doubt, like you said, they lack that self trust in themselves. And so one of the big things I've seen with women is they get adventurous again, like you said, rebelliousness, and it's so exciting to see that. And having that type of confidence just seems to kickstart them in so many other areas of their life. So I really love the fact that you talk about things like activity bit the habit activity, the mindset and lack of comparison to the stupid social media expectations that are out there. It's great. So talking, if we can just go back though to what we were talking about. So I just want to expand more on when we talk about our metabolism changing, where do you think the information came from that said that we can't build muscle as we grow older? It starts to diminish through the decades. And that by building lean muscle, we become this efficient calorie burning machine. They're all sort of a little bit incorrect in statements in general, but can you sort of like shed some light on those a bit more? Because I know that women don't still think that they're going to get big and bulky with exercise, but they're encouraged to build lean muscle to burn extra calories. But I don't believe that you actually do end up burning that much more with lean muscle. Am I correct?
You're correct. It's and for women, if you are using illegal substances to increase your muscle mass, and also those substances also increase metabolic rate as well, then you would see a rise in a small level of metabolic rate. I could also argue that the type of training and working out and mindset that it takes to kind of be one of those people and pursue it also tends to border on high adrenal rushes, anxiety and anxiousness. As well, and even like a higher propensity towards neuroticism as a personality trait, not as like a character judgment. Those kind of individuals tend to automatically also have higher metabolic rates as well. So unless you're doing things like that, it's not, building muscle is not going to show a significant increase in metabolic rate. In fact, to some degree, it could be argued that the more muscle that you build, which is going to be at a low level for a natural woman, even an athlete, the muscle that you build, the effort and energy you take to do that, the kind of cardiovascular system, heart rate lowering that you'd have, the alterations in probably diet due to that, all of those things will probably lead to about the same metabolic rate, or could even potentially be less if you became more efficient in your ability to burn calories, have a lower resting heart rate. So basically anything that you did in your low grade activity life would burn less calories throughout the day. See what I'm saying?
Thanks.
Because you're getting more efficient at things. That's the point of again, the point of exercise and training is to become a more efficient human being.
Yeah, and that's the goal. That's the ultimate goal of exercise. Yes.
And people kind of miss out on that. They kind of don't understand that factor. And don't get me wrong, I think a lot of this gets born out of trying to encourage people to do things that are healthy for them. I think that's where a lot of it stems from. But we have to look at what's called unintended consequences. And, you know, consequences aren't always a negative thing, but they are a thing. And the unintended consequence of training really hard and trying to get in shape in order to lose body fat or in order to have the kind of body that you want could end up leading you to have a lower metabolic rate, not because you did anything wrong and not because you have an eating disorder or disordered habits or that you have orthorexia or any of those kinds of things, but because you simply got in better shape. And people aren't keying into that fact, and so then therefore they get frustrated, and their response to an out of control understanding is circumstances to do more, restrict more, train more, and those kinds of things. So I like to be very succinct and clear with the fact that training needs to be about training. Because anybody can lose fat doing any sort of diet. Anybody can lose fat manipulating any of those kinds of things. You can walk and not eat. And I assure you, I can show you thousands and thousands of studies of prison camp workers who eat nothing and sit in atrophy, both in body fat and in muscle. So you don't have to train. Training is for a completely separate variable. And that variable to me is health. And lean mass is part of that, especially as we get older and we have a tendency towards lower bone density and various other factors that can affect women a lot. I think that training is really important to protect our lean body mass and to make sure that we're in a healthy arena. But I also think that there's a balance with that, and training doesn't just have to be CrossFit or Spartan races or the newest latest fad in which they can see just how far you can push your system. That may be counterproductive to what it is you're doing, and it may also be incredibly productive and give you a team and a lifestyle and but it needs to fit the term, it needs to fit your need. And that's where the individuation comes into play.
Yeah, I agree. And I was, so just rolling with that then, I mean, it's interesting through menopause, our ability to cope with stresses is lessened, and we do struggle. And I know that it's super important to include like rest days.
Yes.
And to just let the body sort of like regenerate and rejuvenate. But, and I think that what's happened is we're an all or nothing breed of humans now, and those that do exercise are struggling to lose weight, so they tend, yep, women, and they'll tend to do well as it's been talked about, like exercise more and eat less, and just push themselves to the point where their bodies are so stressed out that it just can't function properly. I mean, do you see that in your lifestyle?
Yeah.
Well, you must do in the fitness world.
Yeah, well, that's essentially how this is not like a book plug, but it's essentially why I wrote the Starve Mode book, and it's in quotes because it's to be noted a bit ironically. It's a bit about that, because that was a bit of a core client that came to me that was quote unquote could not lose body fat no matter what they did. And one of the key findings of that, in which that still is not, this is still not in popular media. It's still not kind of embraced by popular science just yet. We're getting there. This is one of those kind of cases in which that I think that somewhat of the fitness industry and reading between lines of the research has caught up a little bit before the mainstream, is that at the core of a lot of that is, two major things, which is water inflammation, retention, and efficiency. Essentially that it's not metabolic damage per se, but it's metabolic efficiency and the body trying to do everything it can to meet that conditioning or meet that need and demand for the individual. But ultimately something will suffer. And that's the thing when people lose or trying to be in a deficit or trying to lose body fat, it's not just body fat we're going to pull from. Calcium stores in the bones, oils that feed the hair, glycogen, energy that supplies refill to mental recovery. So, you know, like you said, you know, with menopause, and when we enter into this stage of life, our minds, they get a little nutty. You know,
we go batshit crazy. There's
right.
Don't sit on the fence about this one. Yeah, we're a crazy bunch of wild women. Yeah,
yeah. And I don't know any woman that can't stand or point to a period of time in which that they experience either mild or extremely aggressive PMDD, and usually that kind of picks up a little bit before the period completely goes out the window. There's so many things happening with the ebb and flow of our hormones, from intermittent headaches to intermittent bouts of panic attacks, anxiety, depression. And you can get every bit of sleep at night. You can get exercise. You can eat right. You can do all the things. And it can still come in and it can still get you. So I think one of the best things that we can do as fitness professionals or those who try to inspire is to at least be very clear about what we can and can't affect. And I think one of the problems that I see with a lot of mainstream information is to try and navigate towards, oh, well, you know, as you get older, you're just going to break down, your body is going to decrease in metabolism, your bones are going to be brittle and fail, you will have nothing left, and basically that's it. You know, your 40s, you're dead, you're not worth having sex with anymore, you're not worth having your own life with anymore. Everything's wrinkled up to be dried up, and that's it. We celebrate youth, everything else is mediocrity and goodbye. And I think it's crap. I think it's crap, but I think a lot of women have tried to embrace it with victimization or going, okay, well then, oh, woe is me and nothing I can do. And well, you know, I turned 40 and now everything I do just, you know, I just gain weight and there's nothing I can do. And my body hates me and I have no choice but to sit in this and dwell in it. And I go, no, don't do that. Don't do that. It's not the case. It doesn't have to be that way at all. There's some minor changes that might have to happen in your activity, a lot of changes that have to happen in your mind shift, mostly because of societal pressures and input. And you have decades ahead of you, decades to do whatever it is that you want to do. I think it's complex, and I think it's from a lot of socioeconomical issues and a lot of environmental issues, conservative issues, religious issues. And I just say, screw it, all of it. Screw it. Make your own path.
I agree completely. And I think if we could, one of the things I'm trying to do is almost like rebrand what menopause is. Because, like, you know, initially people will roll their eyes and go, oh my God, she's one of those. She's one of those like menopausing women. But also it's considered to be sort of unimportant, and women have like got this whole like cloak of shame and taboo around it, just from generations of the way our mothers or grandmothers even were around it. You know, it was just a case of, you know, soldier on a little bit. And I think that if we can just like talk about things and just and enhance women's strengths and tell them what they're, how capable they are, and you know that everything that's happening to their body is meant to happen this way. There are things within their control. I think that it can be a phase of their life that isn't dreaded anymore, but a phase that they can go through and almost embrace. I'm at the stage now where I definitely have had a shit storm of a menopause, but I'm so positive now. I'm sort of like getting through the worst of the symptoms. I can see like a whole new light at the end of it, and it's the best I've ever felt in my life mentally, in a mindset way.
Yeah, it's a metamorphosis. And what's funny, and I don't know if this had anything to do with the fact that every bit of me is unconventional, but I always thought, great, no more periods. No, I mean, granted, I'm not really worried personally about getting knocked up, but don't have to worry about that either. Yeah, there's some ebb and flows in the hormones, and there might be some periods of some hot flashes and what have you, but I don't know. It never was a death sentence to me. I never really interpreted it as that. I never really saw it as that. I kind of saw it as a freedom in a way. And I think, but you know, I have a very unconventional look at things. I don't really see aging as these sentences or turning points of life that people see. But I'm not the kind of person that gets caught up with a lot of those kinds of things anyway. I don't see my friends having kids and get worried. I don't see people achieving things at certain times and get caught up. I just don't care. I never have. I feel like I've always been so focused on what my own personal legacy is going to be. And I'm not saying that that's the way everybody needs to do it. But I do think that I note that a lot in men. I do. I note that a lot in men. And I'm not saying that it's a gender issue because I think it's completely gender fluid. I think it's completely free of gender. But I do think that it is a certain way that society has been set up. Women have children. They take care of the children, raise their children. Their children are grown. They have menopause. They, shrivel up and they die. And it's like, wow, that's a really cheery notion. That's something to look forward to. I can't wait to hop on that train. And I don't see that at all. I think it can absolutely, I love that you're trying to rebrand it. I love that it's something that can have a positive spin on it. I don't know why it never did, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that it was a bit of an oppressive turn, be it self-induced or, if you do or do not believe in patriarchal means, I think you can relate it into that. So I think it's a great time. I think it's a great time to step into that like kind of second phase of life even and see what it has to offer.
It's interesting because I'll sort of finish off now because we've chatted away for ages. It's been awesome. I've really enjoyed this, but it's interesting just in general. One of the biggest positives that I polled the group of women that, follow me, and I just said, what's one of the biggest positives you've got out of menopause? Because for sure, the negatives of some of the symptoms can be pretty chronic for women. Sure. But one of the positives is just really just really focusing on the things that matter to them now, and all of the small fluffy stuff that used to really piss them off and get them stressed, they just don't care about anymore. It literally is giving less cares about the stuff that's just not important and really having dedicated focuses in life and surrounding themselves with these people that make them feel positive and beautiful and energized and adventurous. And I think that's to me the big turning point, the big positive about menopause. And your body has to go through quite a lot of shifts to get there.
True.
But it does get there. And all of the women I see now, like in their 50s, 60s, 70s that are postmenopausal, I love them. It's like this whole new brand of women that are getting out there saying, fuck you, world. Like, we're awesome.
Don't care.
And they're rocking the gray hair and the red lipstick and the big glasses. And I'm like, that's me. That's what I want to be. Like, it's so, I think that I'm glad that you have the same sort of outlook as me. And I think that honestly, the type of information that you're giving out is one of the ways that women can get through this, right? Just saying,
just living in the truth.
Yeah,
living in the truth of it and understanding what it to be and taking a completely different mind. I say this with kid's gloves and I say it with compassion and caveating, but no longer embracing the idea of being the victim about it. And instead looking at the variables that come into play. And there are some really not fun variables. I'm not to say that there aren't, but look at the variables that come into play for it and then just go, I don't care. I have control of it. And stop trying to hang on to youth with like clenched tiny fingertips because it's going to happen anyway. It's not like, at this point in time at our technology and stage of life, I don't see it happening in our lifetime that there's going to be anything that we can do about it. So, if it to you is somewhat of, not to you, but to you as the world, is a death sentence of some sorts, if to you it's this kind of whatever, sometimes finding out you have that no control over something and that it's really over allows you to be free in it. So, I say get there as soon as possible. If to you it is a sentence of something, then just start serving time. Get on board at 30. Get on board at 20.
Know what's ahead of you and just be ready.
Get on board. It's great. And it doesn't matter. And you do not need to seek the validation of whatever we've composed that to seem to be anyway. It's just not worth it.
It's not worth it at all. That's awesome. Listen, Lee, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been so great. I've been excited to have you on for a while, and I know lots of people will be excited to hear this episode. If people, you see you doing your Ask Lee, that's coming back in January, and I'm hoping people will tune into that for you. Where else can they find you in the meantime?
I always keep it simple. You can go to leaphill.com and just can take it from there. I'm Googleable. You can Google me.
Googleable. Yep. That's an awesome one. Googleable. Yes. I like that one.
It's a verb.
Anyway, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks everyone for tuning in, and make sure to call back next week for our next guest. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on the services offered by Amanda, please head over to her website at fitandchips.com. That's FITNCHIPS.com, or her Fit and Chips Facebook page. Leave a comment and she promises to respond to all questions. The views and advice expressed by Amanda Thebe are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always contact your healthcare provider.